We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Hello, everybody. I'm Roger Hoover. Glad to welcome you back to the Crimson Tide Sports Network as we get ready for Monday night's national championship game between Alabama and Ohio State. So it's time for the big picture. It's presented to you by Legacy of Hope Alabama. You know, saving a life has never been easier. You can register online at legacyofhope.org to be an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Give the gift of life by becoming an organ donor today. Calling the game on ESPN Radio will be former Tide quarterback and ESPN analyst Greg McElroy, who joins us now. And Greg, I'm sure you're excited to have the assignment for Alabama, Ohio State playing for it all. Just what are you feeling getting ready for Monday?
Well, it's so cool to be a part of the national championship call with Sean McDonough. And I hate that it's under the circumstances that it is. I was called out of the bullpen as the next man up, you know, so with Todd Blackledge unfortunately testing positive, I know how he feels a little bit. I was supposed to actually call the semifinal game between Alabama and Notre Dame on radio and do the Cotton Bowl just a few days before that. So it's been a little unfortunate with some of our luck the last few weeks, but really thrilled to have the opportunity and to obviously call a national championship game for a national platform is going to be really special. And it's a bucket list activity for me, and the fact that it's featuring my school is, you know, all the much more special. I'm not sure I could draw up a better scenario, that's for sure.
Yeah, and first of all, we're just glad you're feeling better. Just what was that week like for you having to quarantine? You're able to still work a little bit remotely, but are you feeling all right?
Jokingly, I did not feel good at least, I think the day of, it was like selection day is really when I kind of started, but it was more fatigue, you know, and it was like one of those days, like, yeah, I was just worn out. I called the game the night before, and I had called the Cincinnati-Tulsa game, and we had gotten off the air at midnight. I had a 6 a.m. flight to LaGuardia to drive to Bristol. So it's like, of course I'm tired, right? Like, naturally, I got 4 hours of sleep and have been on the air for 10 hours. I'm naturally going to be tired. The good news is I wasn't really in a position where I could contact trace anybody out at that point. We did a Bowl Mania show the next day, felt a little more tired. And then on Tuesday, when I got home, that's when I really did not feel well. And on Wednesday, it kind of held. I actually got a negative test on Thursday. So went to Huntsville with my in-laws, scared to death. And they're all fine, thank goodness. My wife never got it. My son never got it. My in-laws never got it. So I've been very fortunate for that. But feeling 100% now after battling a little bit a few weeks ago. But I'm really, really glad to be back in the saddle. And even though my brain, I think all of us at this time of the year, we're all a little cloudy. You know, I'd like to blame the COVID for that, but I think it's just the amount of information. But the national championship's upon us, so we'll sharpen quickly. And I know we're all excited to get to Monday night.
We certainly are. And first of all, your thoughts on Alabama and the performance that Ty had against Notre Dame?
Now, I thought it was pretty amazing. And I know it's, I mean, goodness, knowing Coach Saban, I know he wasn't happy with it. I don't have, I mean, that's the standard, though. You know, that's the beauty of what the program's built over the course of the last 10 years and change, 12 years, 15 years, however long it's been. It's just, you're never satisfied until you play the perfect game. And, you know, spoiler alert, the perfect game will never come. That's the best part. Over the course of a 180 snap game, and that's on the low end, you're going to have one bust. It's going to happen, whether it's in special teams or in field goal or anything. So for those players, don't pay attention to this, but coaches demanding perfection, it's unattainable. That's the best part. So as much as we might try for it, I'm not sure it's ever going to be something that you can possess, but it's been fun to watch it back, because there were teachable moments, but it never felt, you were never concerned, you know, as looking at it, of course, with this platform on it, looking at it through Alabama colored glasses, there was never a moment in which I felt anxious as an Alabama fan. I felt like we were in control. I felt like we were doing what we wanted to do. We were taking what the defense gave us, offensively speaking, because if you really look at it, there weren't a lot of plays to be made down the field. I mean, they were pretty conservative, because Clemson the week before in the ACC championship game, they threw it over Notre Dame's head. You know, it was like, all right, we're not letting that happen to us. No chance we're letting that happen to us. And they actually did a pretty good job. You got to give them credit for what they were able to do as far as keeping the ball in front of them. But it just shows you that this offense has answers for whatever you might throw at them. And if you want to play really soft and you want to keep the ball in front of you and try to keep it and rally up and tackle, and fine, we'll just hammer a slant and Devontae will take it to the house. We'll hit a bubble route. He'll take it to the house. Go for it. So it's a pick your poison style of attack. And I think for anyone that watches offense and football nowadays, that's my favorite attack study, because a lot of teams, they major in one specific category. And if that category is not going, they're toast. Alabama's not that way. They can beat you running it. They can beat you throwing it down the field. They can beat you throwing it outside the numbers. They can beat you throwing it over the middle. They can beat you throwing it to the running back on design run plays that are basically extended handoffs that go down as completions, but they're sweeps. And they can beat you in special teams. And that's, I think, a pretty special team. And it's obviously been so fun to watch and cover. And as a fan, selfishly, it might be my favorite Alabama team so far, knowing what they've had to, granted, I love my team the best in 09, naturally. That's the one I'm most intimately familiar with. But this might be one of my favorites to have covered and to have watched, because I think there's a lot of wonderful stories. I think the teamwork is sensational. There's a lot of unselfish players. And it just, the collection, the sum is greater than each individual part. And that's saying a lot, because each individual part is pretty dang good. So it's really been a lot of fun to watch.
And then looking at Ohio State, just what have you learned about the Buckeyes, either from your film study or getting to talk to the Ohio State coaches earlier today?
Yeah, I mean, they're playing their best football at the most important time. You know, I think it's not that dissimilar to in the NHL, a goalie getting hot, and next thing you know, they win the Stanley Cup. It's really not that dissimilar to that. Or for whatever reason, you're hitting the cover off the ball, like in a College World Series a couple of years ago in Coastal Carolina. It was like Karate Kid. They thought they were seeing oranges, you know, and they were just smashing it out of the park time and time again. And they ended up winning it. Even though they didn't have the best team, they won it, you know. So that's kind of where Ohio State is right now. They have some really good pieces, and those are well documented. And they feel really good about their personnel because they've recruited at such a high level over the last few years. But I think they're really proud of how the team kind of weathered the storm through the first five or six games, trying to find an identity, knowing the challenges that the Big Ten presented to them. The Big Ten said, no, you can't play. Ohio State wanted to play the whole time. People that are banging the drum about Ohio State being in and not. But Ohio State, they weren't the one trying to shut down. They wanted to go. They wanted to play. And if they could have played 10 or 12, they would have. They just weren't allowed to. So I think they're real proud of how calloused the team is as a result of some of that disappointment that they had in August when they shut down. And now they feel like, and sometimes, and I think most people can probably attest to this, whether you're an athlete or whatever, if you get a second chance on life, you seem to live it to the fullest, right? I mean, if you are if you get a second opportunity to revitalize your career, you take advantage. You don't let the opportunities pass you by again. I think that's where Ohio State is right now, because once they went back to playing football, it's like, oh my goodness, we have a new light. Like, this is amazing. But then again, they weren't very well organized at that point. They didn't really have an identity. And it took probably 5 or 6 games until probably the midway point of the Big Ten championship game to figure out what the identity is. And that identity is trying to run the football and trying to create some isolations on the outside for a couple of really talented wide receivers. So they have a really good group that I don't think it's one of those teams that you would say, all right, well, this team, stack them up against Bama. I think Bama has the best personnel, but if you want to stack them up, I think Ohio State maybe isn't quite to the same level as Alabama. I think even their coaches would acknowledge that, but they're closer than most. And that's, you know, that's all you need to potentially, you know, make the game interesting, obviously.
Heading into a national championship game, one of the quarterbacks with a rib injury. We've heard that before, I think, haven't we?
Yeah. All too well, I'm afraid. I wish I didn't know about that. But I'll tell you, the thing that people have asked about, now it's a little bit different, naturally. When we played Florida, I broke my ribs the last play of the third quarter in that game. And then I had 35 days or whatever it was between that game and our game. So basically we had 35 days to like play our way out of rhythm. You know, like in the Florida game, our passing attack was crisp. We were in rhythm. We were dialed in. And we had 12 games of the season. We had worked through, you know, some highs and some lows. And when come Florida, we were running on all cylinders. That was probably the best we threw it, with the exception of maybe a couple games early in the season. That was probably the best we threw it. And then we get the ribs and we go through a week of practice and I just don't feel good. You know, I mean, goodness, I just can't throw it. And I'm limited in practice. And as a result, I'm really not very accurate by my standards at that moment. Like, I wasn't very accurate. Cause I was in some pain. I mean, anyone that's had a rib injury knows it just stinks. It's the worst injury. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. That's for sure. So what affected me and what I realized is on game day, that was the best I'd felt in 35 days. And when Dr. Lyle Kane numbed me up, and by the way, before he numbed me up, he said, just so you know, there's a possibility that your lung collapses. I just have to tell you that so you can acknowledge the risk. I'm like, okay, well, great. Shoot, let's go. Let's do it. So he shot him up, did a great job. And I didn't feel a ton of pain on game. That was a little uncomfortable. And it felt a little unusual because I was so used to just kind of, I don't want to say like protecting that side, but it did feel, I felt different. And as a result, I didn't feel real good throwing the football. I felt better throwing the football that day, but we had gotten so out of rhythm in the last 5 weeks that the passing game wasn't at a point where it could be super effective against a good secondary and a good pass rush. So that's where I think it's different in my case than it would be in Justin Fields' case, because it's only been 10 days. Even if he is a little limited in practice, it won't have a huge effect on the rhythm of the passing game, because there's not that wide gap in which he could kind of play his way out of a lot of confidence and a lot of accuracy. He's not going to get rusty in 10 days, if you will. So that, I think, is the one difference. And I also think, too, he'll be okay. As long as they – now, are they going to be a little bit more cautious about running him? Probably. Just to be expected, because there's not a real well-known commodity as a backup there for the Buckeyes. So I would anticipate them being a little more conservative when it comes to his carries, but I just don't expect it having a huge impact on him being able to throw the football down the field. He executed some throws after the injury, which makes me think he's going to be just fine. If you look at, I didn't throw a single pass in the fourth quarter of the SEC championship game. So because I'm not sure I could have, I might've just had tears as I tried to release the football, but he threw fine and actually threw one that was 61 yards downfield in the air on the dime. So I think he'll be all right. And I think all of us as competitors and as people that support the team and support college football, I want him to be as close to 100% as possible. You want to beat them at their best, because it's no worse feeling as a kid from Texas having to go back to my home state all the time here. And if Colt wouldn't have gotten hurt, we would have won. I'm tired of that excuse. Even though had Colt not gotten hurt, maybe we would have tried to be a little more balanced offensively. We would have had a chance to let those ribs loosen up a little bit.
There you go. Well, we'll get you out of here on this. Of course, in your Alabama career, before you played in the national championship game, you'd played in all the rivalry games, SEC championship game. But is there just a different energy around a game like this where everything is on the line? And I'm sure it's a game where the process gets challenged more than anything, focusing on just doing your job and blocking out everything else.
I would argue, yes, of course, it's a national championship. Of course, you know the platform, you know the magnitude, all those things. You get all those. But I would argue as a player, as a kid, you know, as a 21-year-old kid, I was naive. I didn't think it was any different than any other game that we played in that year. They were all equally big. We needed each and every one of the 13 previously to get to this point. So I didn't feel like it was that much bigger. Now, what's funny, and I think when it actually hit me, because it was when Nick Saban was, and it was 2016, and Alabama ended up losing the game, and it was against Clemson in 16, the Renfrow catch late in the game or whatever. Not to bring up bad memories, but that was the first time that I remember being on the field in preseason thinking, this is historic, or in the pregame, thinking this is historic. Like, Nick Saban is going to, I thought at the time Bama was going to roll. So Nick Saban tonight is going to tie Bear Bryant for the most national championships ever. And I'm going to be here on the sideline watching it. Like, that is history. And I think that was the first time that it kind of sank into me that this game is just bigger, because your legacy as a player, as a coach, your legacy is dependent on whether or not you win a championship at Alabama. It's the truth. I mean, with Heisman's great individual awards, all this stuff, that's all great. But all that started in the last 11 years. Ultimately, at Alabama, we are and always have been about team-oriented championships dating back to 1925. And that's, I think, what's so special. And that's when it hit me, though. I didn't think about it really ever at my point. I never thought about like legacy and all that stuff. I always felt like as a player, we did what we were supposed to do. We were supposed to win the game. That was our job. That's what we did. I never felt like it was anything bigger than that until 2016, when we saw a team win it in 15. Still at that point felt, all right, well, that was inevitable. Even in 14, I'm like, well, they should have won in 14. Because Blake Sims had a tough night against Ohio State. They should have won. Even in 13, well, that was the kick six. They should have won. I always felt like Bama should have won. You know, like, always. And I think our fans can probably sympathize with that. But in 16, it just felt different. I'm like, it's hard to win. And it's hard to win championships. And your entire legacy is defined by that. And if you don't win one, you'll always have regret. For instance, like Jaylen Waddle is doing everything in his power to play in this game because he's never won a national championship. Like, that to him means more than anything in the entire world. And that's amazing to think he's going to have a lucrative career in the NFL, probably play for 15 years, probably go to 10 Pro Bowls, and probably break the Hall of Fame. But, like, I mean, all he wants right now is a national championship because he's never won one. And he knows that that's the last thing in his career that he hasn't gotten that he wants. And they don't just give them away. Only one team wins it a year, and they're hard to come by. So I'm excited to be there to watch it. Whatever the outcome may be, I know it's going to be a special night. And I know the guys on both sides will play as hard as humanly possible, given all their sacrifices this year.
Very well said. Well, Greg, I know a lot of fans are going to be hearing you along with Sean McDonough on ESPN Radio coming up on Monday night. Just a best of luck with the broadcast that's coming up. We hope it's a good night for the Crimson Tide. But thank you for your time today. Roll Tide.
Yeah, usually I dive in real hard on the tape, but I feel pretty good about my understanding of what Bama's trying to do. So I feel good about the preparation. So thanks for having me in, and look forward to seeing you guys. Roll Tide on Monday.
All right, that's Greg McElroy. Thank you for watching the Crimson Tide Sports Network.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. inspiring kid confidence.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.